Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, June 26, 2024. Happy birthday, Uncle Arnold and Aunt Jane, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host Ron Meniza is actually out riding his bike. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. All right, so I went to see my beloved chiropractor, who used to be Paul Suez, but now is Scott Gregoric, and I went and had a good chat with him, and he did a lot of adjustment. And he put my spine back in order. He put my knees back in order. And he looked at my knee and he said, your meniscus was pinched. Your tibia and fibula were twisted around each other. And your spine was misaligned. So you were not getting signals from your brain through the rest of your body. So he did a lovely adjustment. And I do feel better. I feel very tired today. But I'm wondering if that's because my body's readjusting and I'm tired because I worked all week and meanwhile I had this adjustment. So my body needs to settle in to do some cleanup because, I had this really good adjustment. And what he talks about is that his adjustments are not just to adjust your body, it's to adjust your energetics as well. So that was very interesting. There's a lot of bike riding that's going on today. I'm recording this on the weekend, and there's a couple of events that I'm not going to be able to go to, the Tour de Mansfield and the Ride the East. So big shout out to all the people who are riding those rides today. Hope you're having a wonderful time. It's a gorgeous, glorious day today. And I was signed up. I had decided to do Ride the East. I was only going to do 18 miles with Ron, who is still riding despite his discomforts with his muscles. And I was going to ride with him. And then I had a good talk with Dr. Scott, and he said he really didn't recommend it. My concern is that if I had not listened to him, I would not have been able to do as much healing as I might be able to do. So I was a good girl, and I didn't go out and ride, and I'm going to wait for him to tell me it's okay to start riding again. I showed him that I have a trip to the Cape plan, which includes bike riding, at the end of the month. And that I will, I'm hoping to be able to ride then. He said, all right, so we're going to bank your healing now so that you can look forward to riding at that time. But if you just keep riding on your knee, it's just not going to heal. And the thing is that my knee was painful a few days ago, and then all of a sudden in the evening, the pain just abated. And I don't know if that's because of the anti-inflammatories, because the acupuncture kicked in, because of the compression that I was doing. And it hasn't hurt significantly since then. I was a little concerned after Dr. Scott adjusted me if I'd have some rebound pain, and I did not. So the pain is not there. I'm able to walk around, but he said, take it easy. You can do gentle yoga. You can do gentle walks, not for long, around your yard, and just relax. Take it easy. You need to take time to heal. So I decided to heed his issue, and then I'm going to go and see him in a few more days, and we'll see where we're at, and then he'll give me further instruction at that time. And meanwhile, I have physical therapy in like a week and a half from now, and we'll see what they have to say. But I have a lot going on. It's summer. It's gorgeous out. I guess one of the ways I have to enjoy the gorgeous summer is to pay attention to my my bird feeder. By the way, I probably have said this before, but I use that Merlin app, and I love the Merlin app. And those of you who know what I'm talking about, Merlin app is wonderful. It's an app where you can turn it on and you can play it, you can hit play, and it will listen to bird songs, and it'll tell you what birds are around. And so then you hear the bird songs, and then you look for the birds. It also has a function to take a picture of a bird and tell you what it is. I haven't quite figured that out. But because I know the bird calls, I'm recognizing the bird calls now, I've been studying Merlin so much, I'll look up the bird to see what it looks like, and I'm learning what birds are what. And one of the prominent birds it was suggesting that you pay attention to this time of year was the rose-breasted grosbeak, and I'd never seen one before, and it looks like it's a really pretty bird. And then a couple days ago, guess what? One showed up at the bird feeder, and one showed up today as well. What a beautiful bird. It's black on top. It has white markings on top and on bottom. And then it has this rose breast, this very dark red breast. It's a really lovely bird. So I was excited to see the rose-breasted grosbeak. Today on the feeder, we saw the rose-breasted grosbeak. We saw a whole bunch of finches. The finches come together and they hang out together. And some of the house finches have red. I guess the men have red on top and the women don't. They're just sort of tawny colored. So I saw them today. And pretty much every day we see the goldfinch. The goldfinch loves those oil sunflower seeds. So bird watching is something that's great to do because you learn about the birds. If you have a lot of birds in your yard, there's no end of bird song this time of year, and the birds are all over, and so you can really enjoy them. It's very relaxing to interact and look at the birds and learn about them. So that's one of the, if you're looking for an interesting way to do stress reduction and you live where there are a lot of birds, learning about the birds is great, and using an app to learn them. And then after a while, you don't need the app to you start recognizing the calls, and you're like, oh, there's a pine warbler in my yard. There's a red-eyed vireo in my yard. There's a prairie warbler in my yard. There's a rose-breasted grosbeak. There's a finch, and you get to recognize the songs. I think the American woodcock is done mating because I haven't heard the peent of the American woodcock lately. Really cute, funny bird. If you see those funny videos on YouTube with the bird who's doing this bop, that's walking across the road bopping, that's the American woodcock. It's a medium-sized bird with a very long bill because they dig in the ground for grubs and worms and things, and they bop back and forth. Probably, I don't know if they're just dancing or they think it's fun. What we think is that they're actually pressing on the ground so they disturb the worms, so they can figure out where the worms are. But there's hilarious videos with them, and people play the videos and they put music to it. It's very funny. So checking out the birds, that's a nice thing. And I can just hang out in my yard. My yard is gorgeous. It has trees and flowers and birds to listen to. And if the weather's nice, it's nice to hang out there. If it gets too hot, then I have to go in the shade or come back in. So, and I have library books. So I have to figure out other ways to enjoy the summer that are not just riding my bike. And getting rest, which I don't get enough of. I'm always complaining I'm tired and you know, I need to get rest. I need to recover from all these things that are going on. So that's what's going on there. Like I said, my knee isn't really hurting. I got a hinged brace, and by the time I got the hinged brace, I don't really need it, because you're not supposed to wear the brace unless you really need it. If you're in a lot of pain and you really need to immobilize the knee side to side, I don't have that kind of pain right now. So I've got it taped. I'm going to probably take the tape off later and see how I feel without the tape. And then if I don't like it, I'll retape it. But right now all I've got is tape on it, and I'm walking around and I'm not really in pain, so it's great. So I just need to be patient, and you know, on days when I don't have to see patients, relax. So relaxing is a good thing. May I remind you of lovely ways to relax, not only sitting out in your yard and enjoying the weather and being in the sunshine, but don't forget about deep breathing. It's a good idea to do deep breathing anytime you're feeling stressed. Even if you just sit and close your eyes, or lie down and close your eyes and do deep breathing, a couple of easy, great ways to do deep breathing is to just breathe in, hold it for a little bit, and breathe out, and make your exhale longer than your inhale. When you make your exhale longer than your inhale, you access your parasympathetic nervous system. And your parasympathetic nervous system is the part of your nervous system that calms you down. It's your rest and digest. So we want to get out of fight and flight, the sympathetic nervous system, and into rest and digest. So if you can remember to inhale for a shorter period of time than your exhale, that's great. If you want to count, you can do that as well. So one way to do it is to do 4-4-8. So 4-4-8 is you inhale for four seconds, or you know, just count to four in an even way. Whether it's actual seconds or not is fine. Inhale for four, hold for 4 and exhale for 8. And some people do box breathing, but I think I like the idea of the exhale for longer than you're inhaling. So 4-4-8 is good. 4-2-6 is another way to do it. So you inhale for 4, you hold for 2, and you exhale for 6. And so it's really helpful to do, and you can do that anywhere, anytime. If you want to do something more formal, you can participate in person in meditations and yoga. And there's also no end of online meditation and yoga. If you go into YouTube, you'll find lots of meditation and yoga, and you can just search on whatever you're looking for. I personally love to do yin yoga, which is very gentle yoga where you are holding poses for, 2 to 5 minutes. And then restorative yoga is where you're usually using props like a bolster and blocks. And the poses are even easier. And the idea really is to restore your body, is to relax in a restful position that's somewhat stretchy. But the thing, the main part of it is that you're relaxing. When you're doing yin yoga, you're trying to relax your connective tissue. When you're doing restorative yoga, you're trying to relax your you. And then there is yoga nidra. And yoga nidra, of course, is the guided meditation where it's a progressive relaxation. You're guided to relax each part of your body in succession. And that's a really useful thing to do as well. And all of those can calm you down. All right, so I wanted to shout out on behalf of my colleague and friend, Mariah Hinchy, the Healing Lyme Summit is still going on. Well, it goes on from June 4th through June 10th. It's a virtual summit that helps with building a community so that you don't have to go through Lyme disease alone. It's about connecting, sharing experiences, and finding hope. It features experts on diagnosis and treatment of Lyme disease, such as my beloved colleague Mariah, and the esteemed and long-practicing Richard Horowitz, MD, and also Alex Chesney, ND. If you're interested, you can go to drtalks.com/Lyme-Summit-2024. That's drtalks.com/Lyme-Summit-2024. You can watch each day at no charge. Each new day starts at 6 p.m. and the talks are available for that day for 24 hours. There is also a way to watch the entire series at your convenience. That's explained at the website. That's the Healing Lyme Summit 2024, June 4th through June 10th, 2024, at drtalks.com/Lyme-Summit-2024. And I imagine that those will reside there, and there may be a way to access those talks after June 10th. So do consider going to drtalks.com and clicking on it and seeing if there's a way to listen to the talks beyond the fact. All right, so we were going on about hypertension, and we were talking about supplements that help with hypertension. So let's continue with that. We're going to start with melatonin today. Melatonin, which is something that you make if you get plenty of sleep, you make plenty of melatonin, and if you make plenty of melatonin, your blood pressure will tend to run lower. So one of the ways to lower your blood pressure is to make sure you're getting enough sleep, because that's the best way to make melatonin. You can eat foods that have some melatonin in it, like tart cherry. They help you to make melatonin. But you can also take supplements with melatonin. So melatonin is made by your body. It's made in the pineal gland, which is behind your behind the top of your nose, and you can take it as a supplement. They're popular to promote sleep, and they're also associated with other health benefits. Melatonin may reduce blood pressure in people with high levels. And there were 5 studies that showed this, that they used melatonin supplements for significant reductions in blood pressure compared with control. And that low melatonin production may be put you at risk for high blood pressure, especially in women. Then there's green tea. So green tea is associated with a lot of health benefits. So I have to be careful how much green tea I drink, because there is caffeine in green tea. And I'm very sensitive to caffeine. And if I have too much caffeine will raise my blood pressure. And caffeine, I have a hard time burning it off, especially if I'm not getting regular exercise. And if I overdo caffeine and then I don't burn it off, then I'm tired the next day and I wind up having to do more caffeine. So I'm in kind of this caffeine cycle right now, and I'm feeling a little extra tired. I'm wondering if it's a combination of pushing myself and over-consuming caffeine. Anyway, so green tea, if you tolerate the caffeine, it can help with healthy blood pressure levels. If you take green tea supplements or drink the tea for up to 16 weeks, it can significantly reduce blood pressure. So what I do is I take decaffeinated EGCG. EGCG is a polyphenol, which is a wonderful antioxidant that is in green tea. So I take that supplement every day, and it is a decaffeinated supplement. So that's how I'm getting my green tea most of the time. All right, and then there's ginger. So high-dose ginger can also help lower blood pressure. Now, you can consume ginger tea. You can consume concentrated ginger tea where you grind up ginger root and you put a good big handful of ginger root in about half gallon of water, and then you simmer it for at least an hour and then strain it, and then you drink that regularly. Ginger is a wonderful anti-inflammatory. There were some studies that when you take ginger, 3 grams or more of ginger a day for 8 weeks or so, it can significantly lower blood pressure. So if you can't get the tea in and you want to get a really concentrated form of ginger, you have to find ginger capsules with a lot of ginger in it. And if you take capsules and you eat, and you take the capsules and you take a moderate amount of ginger and then you just eat ginger and drink the tea in your daily life, that can help too. They showed that people with metabolic syndrome who have blood sugar regulation issues and increased risk of cardiovascular disease, they found that taking 2 grams of ginger powder a day significantly lowered blood pressure, triglycerides, and blood sugar. So ginger can be really, really helpful that way. So I think we wrapped up on a bunch of supplements that help with ginger. There's some other things that can be helpful. High doses of grapeseed extract can also be helpful. And we're talking about doses approaching. Now, again, talk to your naturopathic physician or your physician about dosing these things. But grapeseed extract, when you take it in doses approaching 400 milligrams, has been studied to help to lower blood pressure, probably because it's a wonderful antioxidant. There's probably some nitric oxide activity there too to calm the blood vessels. And then bonitopeptides have also been studied to be helpful for blood pressure. And bonitopeptides, they think they have ACE inhibitor properties. So angiotensin converting enzyme, so that's the renin angiotensin pathway. So the renin angiotensin pathway in your kidneys, renin converts to angiotensin 1, which converts to angiotensin 2 via enzymes, which then converts to aldosterone, and then aldosterone causes you to retain sodium. And so if you break that cycle at any point in the cycle, you don't retain as much sodium, and you get rid of sodium makes you retain water. So you get rid of more water if you break that angiotensin cycle. So the angiotensin converting enzyme converts renin to angiotensin and angiotensin 1 to angiotensin 2. Maybe that's not right. Maybe it converts angiotensin 1 to 2 and 2 to aldosterone. Anyway, it's part of that whole pathway. And if you block that cycle, then you don't hold on to as much sodium, you lose more water, and your blood pressure goes down. So bonitopeptides are thought to work that way. And then there's amla, which is a wonderful herb. It's an Ayurvedic herb in Indian medicine tradition. And amla is thought to have some ARB activity, so it's angiotensin receptor antagonist. So you can either block the enzyme itself, or you can block the receptor where the angiotensin converting enzyme attaches to the other compounds, to the angiotensin 1 and 2. So if you block those enzymes, then again, the pathway can't function, and you release more sodium and therefore release more water and your blood pressure goes down. We know that ARB pharmaceuticals definitely work, and amla can be helpful in that way as well. So when you're doing supplements, of course, you want to make sure you're talking to somebody who's reputable, that you're getting good quality supplements, and have a chat with somebody who's a practitioner, like a naturopathic physician or a functional medicine doctor or a nutritionist who handles high quality supplements, and that you're getting good quality stuff, because otherwise, if you just buy it for the price, it may not work. So, all right. So now here's herbs that act as natural beta blockers. So a beta blocker is it's your beta adrenergic receptors. Beta alpha and beta receptors bind norepinephrine and epinephrine, and they're part of your parasympathetic nervous system. So your autonomic nervous system. So that's your parasympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. So beta adrenergic, if you have activity, epinephrine, norepinephrine binds to your beta receptors, you're going to get hyped up because it stimulates your fight or flight response. So when you take albuterol, for example, that's an inhaler that you take to open up your lungs so that you can breathe better. If you have asthma, that's used as a rescue inhaler. When you take that, it stimulates your beta receptors. So it will your heart may race, but your lungs will open and you'll be able to breathe more readily. So that's a beta adrenergic agonist. Beta blockers block those receptors and they settle everything down. So they slow your heart rate, they slow your breathing, they slow you down, quite frankly. They slow your pulse. So they're used as antihypertensive agents. They're used to calm blood pressure. And when you slow your heart down, if you have an arrhythmia, they'll tend to slow you down too. And beta blockers also tend to be used in low doses to abort panic attacks. So if you're in fight or flight, you can take a beta blocker and it'll calm you down. So there are natural substances that act as beta blockers, so they help to calm you down. So they're just basic things. So like I told you, beta blockers will treat high blood pressure, they're often used after a heart attack to slow the activity of the heart. They're used for heart failure and chest pain from heart failure. They're used for arrhythmia, as I said, when your heart doesn't beat properly and has an abnormal rhythm. They're used in hyperthyroidism because when you have too much thyroid hormone, it speeds you up. It speeds up your metabolism and it can cause arrhythmias. So it's used then. Like I said, it's used for anxiety, and they might be prescribed off-label for anxiety, especially if you have panic attacks. They also are used for migraines because they can help some of the triggers that lead to migraines. So blood pressure when you're in fight or flight, you're more likely to get migraines if you're a migraine sufferer. So people take beta blockers to help to prevent migraines. So here are some natural beta blockers. Antioxidants, just your basic antioxidants, anything that helps to calm oxidative stress in your body. So antioxidants are found in all kinds of fruits and vegetables, and they probably work in a number of ways. One of them is going to be that they help the integrity of your blood vessels. So if your blood vessels are stronger and more resilient, you're less likely to have high blood pressure. Then there's L-arginine. We talked about L-arginine in general for lowering blood pressure, but L-arginine has beta blocker activity. It is a nitric oxide enhancer, and it can cause your blood vessels to relax and enlarge, so you have that laminar flow. And when you have more L-arginine around, it helps to decrease your blood pressure. In foods, you can get your L-arginine from meats and poultry, from nuts and seeds, and from leafy green vegetables. And then there's potassium. Having adequate potassium in your diet can help to keep your blood pressure calm. Potassium helps to stabilize nerve depolarization. So your nerves are going to tend to be calmer when you have adequate potassium around. People tend to get enough potassium from eating a good diet. You can get it from dairy, from low-fat dairy, if you're not dairy intolerant. Fish has plenty of potassium in it. Bananas, of course, we talked about last time. Bananas have over 400 milligrams of potassium per banana, and potatoes also are a good source of potassium, as is coconut water. Coconut water, 8 ounces of coconut water has 600 to 700 milligrams of potassium in it. It's a lot of potassium. So if you're taking a 99 milligram supplement and you're eating a lot of produce, you may not need to do that if you're getting all that produce. If you don't tend to eat a lot of fruits and vegetables, you probably should be. But then you could consider taking a potassium supplement. And when you get a prescribed potassium supplement, we talked about this before, it tends to be very high dose. You know, you're getting like 1,000 milligrams of potassium, which you may not need if you eat fruits and vegetables all the time. And then garlic has beta blocker activity. It's antioxidant and anti-inflammatory. It's studied for a lot of conditions. It's studied for cardiovascular disease and high blood pressure. And there's studies that it can significantly reduce blood pressure. And as I was saying last week, that one of my colleagues at the conference wanted to give me nitric oxide strips and have me take a black garlic supplement and see if it improved my nitric oxide status. And I couldn't do it because I can't eat garlic. Garlic is, I get a bad tummy from garlic, so I couldn't do it. And then there's hawthorn. I take hawthorn every day. I've been taking hawthorn every day for years. I take just a little bit of the solid extract. It tastes really good. And it has a lot of antioxidants in it, and there is some beta blocker activity. Positive effects on your heart. It's a positive inotrope, which means it helps your heart to beat more efficiently, that each beat of your heart will release more blood if you take hawthorn, and it helps with heart failure, and it helps with your heart rhythm, and it's really helpful. And then there's Indian snake root, also known as Rauwolfia. Rauwolfia serpentina is its Latin name. And Rauwolfia tends to be an overall central nervous system depressant. So it can, it used to be used as an anti-anxiety medication, but because it can make you depressed. It lowers blood pressure because it reduces your body's ability to absorb norepinephrine, which contributes to your fight or flight response. So you definitely feel calmer, but because it lowers your norepinephrine, it can make you depressed. And that's my experience with it. When I've taken Rauwolfia, I tend to get sad and sleepy. So it's a problem because it does work to lower blood pressure, and it has worked in the past for me to lower blood pressure. But it also makes me sad and sleepy. So that's unfortunate. Then there's red yeast rice, which I think of as a cholesterol modifying compound. It has monacolins in it. Red yeast rice has monacolin K, which works similarly to a statin. It has a similar structure to lovastatin, and it's the most well-studied compound in red yeast rice. So they found that if they gave people red yeast rice and olive oil, it improved their lipid profiles. And so I guess the way that it's lowering blood pressure is it's lowering cholesterol. So if you have better cholesterol function, you'll have better blood pressure function. Then there's barberry, which is berberis and berberines in general. It lowers blood pressure because it reduces inflammation. So since inflammation's been linked to hypertension, barberry can help to lower blood pressure. So it works from the level of reducing inflammation. So things that reduce inflammation in general are going to help with your blood pressure. That's one of the ways that fish oil, for example, helps to lower blood pressure. Speak of the devil. Omega-3 fatty acids. Omega-3 fatty acids can be helpful for heart health. It helps your rhythm. It helps reduce your blood pressure, blood clots, plaque deposits, reduces inflammation. It's one of the things that I'm taking right now, and my lipids are in really good shape right now. Because it reduces inflammation and also manages lipids, that's one of the ways it's going to reduce blood pressure. Then there's coenzyme Q10. Coenzyme Q10 is very helpful for increasing energy production in your body. It's another great antioxidant. When you have low Q10, related to more cardiovascular disease. There was a study that found that CoQ10 supplementation can help lower blood pressure, and it was a rat study. So they found it in rats, maybe, and it may also relate to humans. So magnesium can have apparently beta blocker activities, and it calms you down in general. And magnesium it's a membrane stabilizer, so it makes it so that your nerves don't react as intensely as they might if you had if you didn't have as much magnesium on board. And magnesium helps muscles to be softer and helps them to not be as tense. And so when you have more magnesium present in your blood vessels, in the muscles of your blood vessels, your blood vessels will be calmer, and you will and your blood pressure will tend not to be as high. So your muscles will contract in a more regulated and calm manner if you have adequate magnesium on board. And so having magnesium is one of the important things to have on board if you have a blood pressure issue, and also if you have anxiety. And if you have anxiety and you tend to high blood pressure, lowering your anxiety helps to lower your blood pressure. So the foods that you eat to help to lower your blood pressure, there's very few risks to eating fruits and vegetables unless you're allergic to them or you have some kind of a irritated bowel, whether you have bowel inflammation or you have IBS, where it makes it harder to eat fiber and fruits and vegetables and things. Most vitamins and minerals can be safely consumed in a multi, and then if you're going to do higher doses of things, it's a good idea to talk to a practitioner to get help with that. All right, so that's beta blocker, specifically beta blocker activities. And now here's some herbs that can be helpful for, specifically herbal remedies that can help with high blood pressure. And I'll try not to repeat things that we already talked about. All right, so cinnamon is something that can help with blood pressure. People have used it for centuries to treat heart conditions, high blood pressure. Its mechanism is not entirely understood, but there is studies that suggest that it can relax and dilate blood pressure. So it may have some nitric oxide activity, and it may be another mechanism. They did a very large study where they gave people a lot of cinnamon and showed that it reduced systolic and blood pressure by about 6.2 and 3.9 milligrams mercury, millimeters mercury, respectively. And it was stronger when taken over 12 weeks. So cinnamon is easy to add to your meals. You can put it into any food that tastes good. I keep bottles of cinnamon near the salt and pepper. So, I mean, it doesn't sit in a drawer. It sits out. It has a place of honor among my herbs and spices. So, and it goes into my protein shake every day. And then anything I think it will taste good in, I put it in coffee. If I'm drinking coffee, I put it in oatmeal. Put it in yogurt and anything, again, anything that'll taste good on. And you can, if you keep your cinnamon out, you can remember to just shake it on anything. You can have it in large amounts and it's harmless unless you're allergic to it, and it can be very helpful. All right. Then garlic. We talked about garlic already. Let's see if there's anything. There's definitely studies that show that reduces systolic and diastolic blood pressure. Quick review, systolic blood pressure is your top number. That's the pressure at which your heart releases blood into your body, where the ejection pressure, and the diastolic is your filling pressure. So when your aortic valve is open, that releases blood into the rest of your body, that it comes out of your left ventricle, and that pressure, that's your systolic pressure. Your diastolic pressure is when the aortic valve is closed and the heart is filling with blood to get ready for the next release. So garlic helps to lower systolic and diastolic blood pressure as well. Then there's basil. So good old basil, the stuff that you get on your pizza or you put in your, that's in Italian seasoning, that's part of pesto. And it has a lot of powerful compounds. It helps to reduce blood pressure. They gave rats basil for 8 weeks and saw as much as a 20 milligram mercury of systolic blood pressure decrease and 15 milligrams mercury in diastolic. So that's significant. That can take you from borderline into the normal range. That's really good. Or it can take you from, you know, so if you're at 140 over 90, now you're at 130 over 80, and that's much better than what you were before. So it's really good. Parsley, it's a popular herb, and it's popular in the it's native to the Mediterranean. It's popular in a lot of foods. If you've eaten tabbouleh before, it features parsley. It has a lot of compounds. It has vitamin C, dietary carotenoids that help lower blood pressure. High doses of carotenoids help with blood pressure. So if you take vitamin A and beta carotene, that can be helpful, and parsley's carotenoids will help you as well. Animal studies have shown that parsley reduces both systolic and diastolic blood pressure, and it has calcium channel blocker activity. So calcium channels are on your blood vessels, and when they open up, when you have an influx of sodium into the calcium gated channels, then you'll have more of an action potential and the blood vessels will contract more intensely. So if you block those channels, you won't have as much reactivity of the blood vessels, and the calcium channels won't allow the sodium in, and the blood vessels will be calmer, which tends to lower your blood pressure. So parsley has calcium channel blocker activity. That's very interesting. And then there's celery seeds. So this is the seeds, not just the stalk. Celery seeds have fiber, manganese, calcium, magnesium, and iron in them. And there was a study of a number of participants that showed the effects of celery seed on blood pressure. Half the participants were given 1.34 grams of it, and the other half were given placebo. And they found a decrease in blood pressure in the celery group and no change in the placebo group. So celery seeds really can be helpful. Celery seeds you can eat. You can get celery seeds and sprinkle them onto your salad. You can eat them in your hand. They're rather flavorful. So they will go. I would recommend eating them in something savory. So, you know, putting them on your meat or fish or your salad or something like that. And they do have a lot of fiber. And when you eat plenty of fiber, that can tend to give you lower blood pressure. And so that's another thing. So then thyme, thyme the herb. Thyme is a very flavorful herb. It has rosmarinic acid in it, and rosmarinic acid is anti-inflammatory. There's studies that show that rosmarinic acid helps to reduce blood pressure, and it works as an ACE inhibitor, an angiotensin-converting enzyme inhibitor, which we already talked about. It slows down the renin-angiotensin pathway, so you let go of more sodium and therefore release more water. So thyme has been shown to do that as well. It's very interesting. With ginger, we already talked about. There's studies on high-dose ginger. Those who consume the most ginger, 2 to 4 grams a day, have the lowest risk of blood pressure. So getting regular ginger into your body can really help with blood pressure. Then there's cardamom. Cardamom is very flavorful. If you go to the Indian restaurant, you'll find cardamom in a lot of your dishes, especially your rice. It's really delicious. It's somewhat sweet. It's somewhat intense. It tastes nice in coffee. It's really interesting. If you get Turkish coffee, it will have cardamom in it. So cardamom is something else that if you take 3 grams of cardamom powder a day, it can significantly reduce your blood pressure. And it's really tasty. You can put it in cooking and baking. It will go in sweet things as well as savory things. You just have to like the taste. It is an unusual taste if you're not used to it. You know, if you haven't grown up eating Indian cuisine, it might taste a little funny. It might take some getting used to. I like the way it tastes. Ron likes the way it tastes. And so we do have it in our foods. And then cat's claw. So cat's claw we think of as being used for something to kill Lyme disease, but cat's claw can help with blood pressure. The form of cat's claw that you use is actually Uncaria rhynchophila, which is gutang or chotoka, which is not the same as Uncaria tomentosa. Uncaria tomentosa, that's the one you use for Lyme disease. So it's Chinese cat's claw, Uncaria rhynchophila. So that's the one that helps with blood pressure. It's like you have to know the difference between Chinese skullcap and regular skullcap. And then this is Chinese cat's claw. It has hirsutine and rhynchophilline, and they may stimulate blood pressure. So again, they're supposedly nitric oxide enhancers. Helps you to make nitric oxide. If you make more nitric oxide, you're going to calm your blood vessels down. So taking Chinese cat's claw or compounds may help reduce blood pressure and flow. So it needs to be studied more. Then there's Bacopa. So Bacopa monnieri is something I think of for memory. It helps your brain to function better. Taking some water. By the way, adequate hydration is also something that can help with your blood pressure. I'm making sure to do that. So Bacopa monnieri grows in marshy areas in South Asia, and it's used in Ayurvedic medicine. It helps with memory and blood pressure. It helps lower both systolic and diastolic blood pressures. And again, it's a nitric oxide enhancer. So if it's improving circulation in your body, it's probably also going to improve circulation in your brain. And that may be part of how it works for both. So there's promising studies. There needs to be more research. But Bacopa, I tend to give Bacopa to people who have memory issues. And some people find that Bacopa is really helpful for that. But that's interesting to know that it's also helpful for blood pressure. So highly effective herbs can be basil, cardamom, and celery seeds. But the thing is that medications do tend to reduce blood pressure faster than herbs do. If you are able to eat a healthy diet that includes a lot of produce, fruits and vegetables, clean protein, if you get rid of preservatives and sugar and probably excess caffeine in your diet, you're going to tend to have lower blood pressure. If you tend to get regular exercise, if you tend to meditate or do yoga or any relaxing practice, whether that's sitting in the yard watching the birds or taking regular naps, interrupting your busy day to relax, all of those things can help to lower blood pressure. Anything that increases your fight or flight is going to tend to increase your blood pressure, and anything that increases your rest and digest is going to tend to lower blood pressure. And so also weight loss tends to lower blood pressure, and that may be because you have less of you to carry around. And it's also if you lose weight in a healthful way, by eating fruits and vegetables, fiber, getting rid of processed foods, getting rid of sugars and excess calories, then you're doing things that actually lower blood pressure, and it may be the actual lowering of the weight itself, but also the things you do. You have to engage in healthful activities and healthful habits to lose weight. So it may be the healthful habits that are doing it, and you may lower your blood pressure without losing weight by doing those healthful habits. It's always a good idea to do healthful habits. So those are ways to lower your blood pressure. Okay, so that was herbs to help with hypertension. Now let's take a look at meds. Here's recommendations for if you are athletic, which are the best meds to take. So the issue is, hypertension is the most common cardiovascular disease in athletes, and it can cause long-term mortality and morbidity. And so there are there can be long-term effects to dealing with hypertension, unfortunately, even if you're an athlete. And you can be an athlete and still have hypertension. So there are athletes who have to take blood pressure meds even though they're athletic. So in the athletic population, the first line of medication should be ACE inhibitors and angiotensin receptor antagonists and calcium channel blockers. And the reason you use those, you generally don't want to use beta blockers, and you generally don't want to use diuretics in athletes, because a diuretic, athletes need their water. And so if you take a supplement that pushes loss of water, that's going to affect your electrolytes, it's going to affect how your muscles work, and it's going to affect your hydration status. So it's really not a good idea to use diuretics in people who are athletic. And then beta blockers will interfere with your ability to get your heart rate up, and you need to get your heart rate up. You need your systolic pressure to rise when you're doing athletic activity, or else you won't have enough circulation to do your activity. So it's a good idea not to use beta blockers and to use and not to use diuretics. These other compounds, the angiotensin receptor antagonists and the calcium channel blockers and the ACE inhibitors, have less risk. When you evaluate an athlete with high blood pressure, you want to look at other historical findings, their family history, their diet history, alcohol and drug use, so if they're using a lot of alcohol, which is common with some athletes, that can lead to elevated blood pressure. And so if you screen for habits that are making their blood pressure high, you may be able to take those out, and then that tends to lower their blood pressure. And if athletes are eating too much sugar, like if they're not eating enough fruits and vegetables, like all the same things that affect other people can affect athletes too. They might be, they think, well, I'm getting so much exercise, it doesn't matter if I eat some sugar. Well, if their blood pressure is high, they may want to back off on the sugar, and lowering the sugar might help their blood pressure to go down. If you use thiazide diuretics, they're often used in initial management of hypertension, but again, they can make you dehydrated, and so that just doesn't really work. So that would be things like hydrochlorothiazide and chlorthalidone, as you're losing your water, you may also be losing minerals that you need for your muscles to work properly. So that's your potassium, your calcium, magnesium. So it's not a good idea. So calcium channel blockers act by inhibiting voltage-gated calcium channels in cardiac and vascular muscle. It makes your it decreases your cardiac contractility and relaxes your vascular smooth muscle. So it can decrease your cardiac output and your vascular resistance, which reduces your blood pressure. So that it can really help to lower blood pressure that way. And amlodipine is commonly used. So it can have some lower rates of side effects like headaches, flushing, dizziness, and fatigue. If you take a low dose, like 2.5 milligrams daily, that's extended release. It's amlodipine, 2.5 milligrams once a day, or diltiazem, 120 milligrams. And that may be helpful. And then the ACE inhibitors and the ARBs. So the ACE inhibitors, as we said before, blocks the actual enzyme, angiotensin converting enzyme, and the ARBs block the receptor that attaches to in the pathway. And angiotensin II is a potent vasoconstrictor, and as we said before, aldosterone increases renal absorption of sodium and water, which increases circulating blood volume and therefore blood pressure. And the ACE inhibitors block the enzyme responsible for converting angiotensin 1 to 2, which causes vasodilation. And ARBs block the receptor of type 1 angiotensin 2, which also increases vasodilation, lowers your aldosterone release, and decreases your reabsorption of sodium and water. And that lowers your blood pressure. There was a study that looked at a young patient population and showed a reduction in blood pressure when compared with calcium channel blockers, beta blockers, and thiazide diuretics. And they have, so the ACE inhibitors and ARBs have similar blood pressure lowering effects. So in patients with past heart attacks, ACE inhibitors with athletes or with diabetes or chronic kidney disease is also recommended. So when you use an angiotensin receptor antagonist, it avoids the most common side effect of ACE inhibitors, which is the dry cough, which can affect up to 10% of individuals. Beta blockers, like I said, it decreases your fight or flight. I don't think it's a good idea for athletes. So sports participation in athletes with hypertension, they are suggesting that you alter your participation in sports until your hypertension is controlled, because stage 1 hypertension without end organ damage shouldn't limit participation. With stage 2, if there's evidence of end organ damage like ventricular wall thickening, then you should restrict participation. And so you would find that out by doing an ultrasound. And if the person has ventricular wall thickening, then they have to lower their activities so to give the heart a rest, to give it time to heal, and then, you know, use your blood pressure meds to calm everything down. So hypertension is the most common cardiovascular disease in athletes and the most common medical condition diagnosed in general. And you have to appropriately diagnose hypertension, including measurement with a number of measures over time and ambulatory measures. In the athletic population, you could have secondary high blood pressure because of ergogenic aids, things that you use to push your activity, or use of illicit drugs and alcohol and other medical conditions. So you have to screen for all those things before you go and give a medication. And they think that angiotensin receptor blockers and ACE inhibitors are first line for most athletes, and calcium channel blockers are helpful in older athletes and also in the African American population. So those are going to have less side effects, and you'll be able to continue to do your sport, hopefully, as long as you don't have excessive side effects and you dial in your dose correctly. But, you know, just because you're an athlete doesn't mean you don't have hypertension. It certainly can happen. So that's interesting. All right. So that's blood pressure medication for athletic people. Now let's talk about energy drinks. Energy drinks are something that if you take too much of them, are they really a good idea for you to take? So there's energy drinks like Monster and Red Bull and 5-Hour Energy. They can increase your energy, but they can have problems associated with them. So they continue to increase in popularity. Energy drinks contain ingredients that are marketed to increase your energy and your mental performance. They often have a lot of caffeine in them. So if you have a problem with blood pressure, they might not be a great idea for you, because they not only do they have caffeine in them, but they have things in them to sustain the release of the caffeine. Your caffeine content of your energy drinks could be anywhere from 80 to 200 milligrams of caffeine. A little 5-hour energy can have 200 milligrams of caffeine in it. And most of your cans that you get in the grocery store or in the convenience store have about 160 milligrams of caffeine in them, which is a decent cup of coffee. Red Bull only has 80 and Amp has 142, but it's anywhere from 80 to 200 milligrams. So you have to be careful of that. So if you keep drinking those, it's a lot of caffeine, and they tend to go down easy if you like the way they taste. So you can get into a whole bunch of caffeine before too long, and it can give you palpitations and cardiovascular issues and arrhythmias. So energy drinks often have sugar in them. It's main source of calories, but, and some are low carb and don't have sugar in them. They usually have B vitamins, and B vitamins can be energizing. They help to regulate your blood sugar and your neurotransmitters. And then amino acid derivatives, there's taurine and L-carnitine, and they're involved in various biological processes. They can be energizing. And then they often have guarana in them. Guarana has caffeine in it. So that's one of the ways that they get the caffeine into the energy drink with guarana. And it will increase the amount of caffeine. Ginseng doesn't have caffeine in it, but it is energizing and has positive effects on brain function. Energy drinks can improve brain function. People consume them for a number of reasons. And the studies are equivocal on whether they really do include increased brain function. There are some studies that show that they do indeed improve function, like memory, concentration, and reaction time, and reducing mental fatigue, and showed that a particular drink, they studied a particular drink and showed that it did in fact increase memory and concentration. The researchers believe the increase in brain function is just because of the caffeine. So when the caffeine's on board, you feel better. When the caffeine's off board, you're not going to feel as good. So they may help people function when they're tired. So if you're tired and you're in a place where you can't rest, like you're on a long road trip or you're working late, that energy drinks can increase your driving quality and reduce sleepiness. And you know, people who are night shift workers will take them as well. But it also reduces sleep quality. So you're not going to sleep as well if you're pushing yourself with a lot of extra compounds and caffeine. They definitely can cause heart problems in some people. The energy drinks can improve your brain function, help you stay alert when you're tired, but it can definitely affect your heart rhythm. And so energy drinks have been implicated in heart problems and emergency room visits even. So multiple studies have shown that consuming energy drinks can also raise blood pressure and your heart rate. So it's a good idea to be careful with them. So I'm not saying don't ever drink them if you need to, but it's always better to rest than it is to, if you're tired, to push yourself. And I know I get into situations where it's hard for me to rest also, and that happens at work all the time. But then you have to, you have to front load your rest in other ways, which is something that I'm working on all the time, trying to get more rest. And I'm looking forward to, after making this show, to getting a lot of rest today. So anyway, there's a lot of sugar in some energy drinks. There's one of them has 27 grams of sugar, and you're not supposed to exceed like 45 grams of sugar in a day. And then others, the great big cans, will have like 54 grams of sugar in them. And your blood sugar is definitely going to spike. So your blood pressure is going to spike, and then it's going to drop precipitously, and you're going to be more tired than when you started. And that much sugar can give you more oxidative stress and inflammation. People with diabetes have to be concerned about that amount of sugar. So now energy drink manufacturers are lowering the amount of sugar in their energy drinks. If you mix energy drinks and alcohol, bad idea. Because you have the stimulating effects of caffeine that overrides the depressive effects of the alcohol, And if you tend, it'll make it so that you drink more alcohol. And so then you're more likely to drink and drive because the caffeine is keeping you alert, well, even though the alcohol is calming you down. So there are now more pre-mixed alcohol drinks. So please don't do that. It's not a good idea to mix energy drinks and alcohol because you can't tell how impaired you are once you're on the when you have the caffeine of the energy drink. All right. So children and teenagers like to drink energy drinks. Also not a great idea. And so the American Academy of Pediatrics recommended that they shouldn't drink them. And that's because the caffeine found in energy drinks places them at risk of becoming dependent or addicted to caffeine and have negative effects on your developing heart and brain. Experts set caffeine limits on teenagers that you shouldn't, that if you're a teenager, you really shouldn't have any more than 100 milligrams of caffeine a day. That's the equivalent of half a cup of coffee. There's less caffeine in that usually in a cup of Coke, of Coca-Cola and other cola drinks. So should anyone drink energy drinks? Great question. It's generally recommended that you have no more than 400 milligrams of caffeine in a day. And when you drink 8 ounces, a cup of coffee, a moderate cup of coffee will have 80 milligrams of caffeine in it. And energy drinks are sold in big containers, and they can have as much as I said, 200 milligrams of caffeine in them. And so, and they have herbs like guarana, which has so there's added caffeine, and then there's also guarana. So that makes it not such a great idea either. So, I mean, if you have a little bit once in a while and you don't have heart problems, you don't have blood sugar problems, it might be okay. But like I said, it's always better to rest if you are tired. Energy drinks can deliver some of their benefit by increasing brain function and help you function when you're tired or sleep deprived. But there's problems with it. If you mix alcohol and caffeine, that's not a good idea. And you can easily get yourself into a situation where you're drinking too much caffeine to the point where you're raising your blood pressure and causing heart rhythm issues. And if you're pregnant and nursing and children and teenagers, probably shouldn't drink them at all. So there you go. Energy drinks are, I have an issue with them because energy drinks tend to have a lot of chemicals and stuff that's not really good for you to have. There are natural energy drinks that the only energy substance in them is green tea and maybe some herbs that are going to be a little bit better. They tend to be energizing. But the chemical energy drinks are probably generally not a good idea. I mean, have them once in a while, but don't rely on them. So there you go. So if you want, you can go to drtalks.com, Healing Lyme 2024, and listen to those talks at any time. They'll be available from, they're continuing to be posted from June 4th to June 10th of 2024. You can go to drtalks.com to listen to those. All right, so you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.